marked with apprehension in any envelope he offers me. For instance, to my dear wife on the occasion of our 31st anniversary, contained a pocketbook, alimony and support, a lawyer's guide to what it would cost your husband if you were no longer married. One addressed to my dearest darling honey bunch, enclosed a beautiful card, all turquoise and green and gold, with peacocks and foliage and flowers, and the message, "We're divorced, very truly yours." The one was special anniversary fire kit, written on the outside, contained three elegantly wrapped packages. The instructions, anyway. For three elegantly wrapped packages. Being much younger and more gullible, I conscientiously followed his directions. The first package I was instructed to open. It contained matches. The second, fire starter. And the third was to be ignited, unopened, to give prettiness to anniversary celebration. We had pretty anniversary celebration. I burned my favorite red nightie. A quote from Mahatma Gandhi has given me much comfort over the years I have been married to the honored guest. And some of you may find it supportive in dealing with him. I shall conquer untruth by truth. And in resisting untruth, I shall put up with all suffering.
Mr. President, distinguished, if over gentle, roasters, ladies and gentlemen, dear, dear ladies and gentlemen, there is a Greek word, astios, whose meaning I read is urbane, clever, witty. And from astios, according to Webster's second edition, derives our English noun astiism, defined as any polite and ingenious method of deriding another person. By that authoritative definition, I suggest that some of what we have here today heard has been astiism at its very best. I suggest further, Mr. President, that you have assembled roasters of such impressive talents that even where their presentations have been less than pure astiism, they have at least been half-assed-ism. Actually, everyone here knows the public speaking reputations of these men. And now this dear lady. My resident stoolie. Lady Blabbermouth. Really, we all know that these men who have spoken to us, all of them, are speakers to whom you can listen forever. Usually when you've already had a bad day anyway. It is true that there have here been said one or two things that might well evoke retaliatory response from a mean-spirited or petty or overproud or more vindictive man. But how can I, for instance, be vindictive about old Bob Yeats? Bob, whom I have indeed known for 45 years, in good times and bad, my lifelong brother, confidant, and loyal advisor. Indeed, not just our industry attorney, but our corporate counsel and my personal lawyer for years and years and years, right up until 9 minutes ago. I'll level with you. In planning a response, I tried to dig up some really racy and spicy stuff on some of these roasters. Knowing the near unassailable virtues of these men, you can realize that it was a virtually impossible task. I was, however, able to put together a tiny file. That's a bravonel. Since the first of the month. I must confess that our youthful president and I have disagreed about this event from the beginning, about the idea of a roast in general and the roastee in particular. As must now be apparent to you, in these battles, the young, headstrong, ugly, naked, raw power of high office has run roughshod over sweet, modest, mature, middle-aged wisdom. And please note that I am not saying that Mr. Williams is just too young to handle high-level arguments in a mature manner. Nor is he the only Rotary president with whom I have had 6 contentious and emotional interviews. He is, however, the only one 6 times to hit me with his damn teddy bear. I have understandably been thinking of Rotary and me these past few days. In January 1950, a man named Whitaker introduced himself to me and sold me on becoming a Rotarian. My father had been president of the Exchange Club and an officer of their national organization, and had so raised me that I was sure I was settling for second best. Some weeks later, a local newspaper published false statements about me. It was a mistake, but near ruinous for me. Appropriate retraction and apology could not be made until after the day on which this club was to vote on my membership proposal. I called my sponsor and suggested that my name ought to be withdrawn. He agreed. With what I have always felt was unwarranted alacrity and enthusiasm. In a few minutes, I got a call from a deep-voiced man who said his name was Evans and that he was the president of the Rotary Club. He said, "Mr. Craycroft, I'm not allowing the withdrawal of your name. Don't worry about a thing." He laughed a kind of a sad little laugh and said, "The fix is on." And when I say the fix is on, Mr. Craycroft, the fix is on. I knew my father had been following the matter with interest, and I immediately went right over to his office. And I had to wait for a few minutes while he worked on some ward bishopric business. And then I rushed in and I blurted it out and I said, "Dad, I'm going to get in the Rotary Club after all." And he said, "Do they have membership classifications like exchange?" And I knew he wouldn't like it too much, but I knew how much he loved the truth, so I had to say, "Yes, my classification will be cigar and tobacco distributing." And he said, "You must have got the membership problem, the trouble, straightened out." And I said, "Yes, it looks like they're going to have kind of a slick deal. One of the guys is fixing the election." And my father said, "What guy is fixing an election?" And I said, "I think he's one of the apostles." My father said, "Go and wash your mouth with soap." Anyhow, in those days, the custom was to have a sponsor stand up at a business meeting and make a nominating speech for his candidate. And the entire membership voted the applicant up or down. Jimmy Whitaker had only met me that once in his life, and he was a dear friend of my father. He was also, odds on, the world's worst nervous public speaker. When it came time to speak for me, he first drew a blank, fell into a shaking funk, and then spoke eloquently for 4 minutes about my father. Half of them pressured by phone calls from Richard L. Evans, and the other half, believing they were voting for my father, the club accepted me as a member. That is all true. It is true also that on that afternoon, I received 2 congratulatory phone calls, the first from Clayt's brother, the second from his father. Nor has their family's thoughtfulness and generosity to me diminished in Clayt's generation. Only minutes ago, this distinguished and sensitive man, recognizing my nervousness, made as splendid and selfless a gesture as I have ever witnessed. And I am still some taken back and awed by it. How often do you find someone willing to share a teething ring? The truth is, I had serious reservations about joining. My sponsor scarcely knew me and tried to weasel out of it. And I was elected in a rigged election by a membership which in part thought it was voting for someone else. But I did eventually get to a Rotary meeting, and I figured I'd try it a few more times. As nearly as I can figure, that was 28 years ago last Tuesday. In all these years that these people at this head table should even recognize me has been a continuing source of wonderment to me and infinite pleasure. And I've never looked out at you from this table without rethinking Miranda's exaltation and reliving its joy. This occasion most especially included. Oh, wonder how many goodly people are there here, how beauteous mankind is. Oh, brave new world that has such people in it. Good and beauteous people, I thank you.
Rotarians and Rotarians, we don't want you to leave. We're not quite finished. It took all of the foregoing deception to get Laurie to show up today so we could do something which Laurie has had coming to him for a long time. What I refer to now is not the roast, but rather a toast to that Rotarian, Laurie Craycroft, who has done more than any other to cheer our hearts and lift our spirits. For us, having Laurie in our midst for the last 28 years has been a close encounter of the best kind. Two of Laurie's greatest admirers couldn't be with us today and have sent a letter and a cablegram, which I'd like to read at this time. The first is from General Lewis H. Wilson, Commandant of the United States Marine Corps. Dear Laurie, I got wind of your roasting and had fully intended to come out and join in the fun, but eventually concluded that if I showed up there in my uniform, you would think you were being recalled to active duty. At your advanced age, I was not sure you could handle such a shock, so I decided to stay away. Seriously, Laurie, pressing commitments in Washington prevent me from joining with you and your many friends and admirers in Salt Lake City on this special day of tribute to you. You are held in high esteem by your Marine friends for your many contributions to country and Corps during World War II, and your obvious identification as a former Marine in the many years thereafter. I count myself, an old foxhole mate, as one of your most ardent admirers. Jane joins me in extending our congratulations and very best wishes to you and Kay on this special occasion. Next is a cablegram from Jack Galvin, who is in Africa. Dear fellow Rotarians, I despise my absence from your luncheon today. I'm en route to Ubangi, Ujiji, Uganda, at the request of the governor. My mission is to capture and bring home a colony of the infamous Uganda giant termites. My instructions are to deposit the colony of giant termites in the foundation of the Bicentennial Concert Hall. The governor believes this will speed the deterioration of the new concert hall, which will make possible, perhaps in our lifetime, its complete authentic restoration. The legislature has promised full cooperation. Now, despite the atmosphere of hilarity I know must prevail at today's meeting, about today's Rotary guest of honor, I must be serious. Not being witness to his long overdue recognition disturbs me. I have known about the honoree almost all my life as one whose dedication to mankind is evidenced in a uniquely elfish manner. Knowing him has been for me, as for all who cherish a great human being, a matter of love. Love is an extravagant word for one man to use in reference to another, but no other word can express its meaning. In war and in peace, this man has sought and continues to seek fair treatment for all men within his own community, throughout his nation, and indeed the world. The man you honor today, through his sense of eternal fitness of things, evidenced in his pleasant and amusing style, has done more to place in proper perspective for all of us this troubled world than any man I know. Through his noble wit, the flashing mirror of great intelligence and wisdom, he accomplishes more than an assembly of honest, dedicated, plodding minds and wills in leadership of the embroiled masses of this earth. for the happiness he has brought us, for the prospect of ever more happiness, for the peaceful, engaging human relationship for which he constantly strives, mightily yet subtly. You, fellow Rotarians, and I are forever grateful. I sorely regret today my absence from this memorable occasion, but I join with you in hearty, loving salute to your great guest of honor. Sincerely, Jack Gallivan. Laurie, with that prelude, we, your fellow Rotarians, would like to present you with Rotary's high honor, a token of our love and esteem. We hereby designate you a Paul Harris Fellow. In appreciation of tangible and significant assistance given for the furtherance of better understanding and friendly relations between the peoples of the world. Laurie, will you stay here just a second? Would the great woman behind the man please come up and kiss your new fellow?
May not know that today is Laurie's birthday, and I feel he would like to share with you his joy when opening the gift I've selected.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are adjourned.